From the book of Isaiah, chapter 21, verse 6. For thus the Lord said to me, go, set a watchman, let him announce what he sees. And then from verse 9, fallen, fallen is Babylon, and all the images of her gods lay shattered on the ground. This summer, we got an interesting gift from the past, I think. A book known to have been written by Harper Lee, author of the revered To Kill a Mockingbird, was finally published, one of only two books that she wrote. The new publication, entitled Go Set a Watchman, was apparently written prior to the publication of her bestseller and involves many of the same characters, though the theme is distinctly different. So I wonder how many of you have had a chance to read it. Anybody? Not very many. I know a number of friends who have refused to read it based on the suggestion that Lee may not really have given her permission and wanting to respect her preferences. Rumor has it the book was largely unedited when it was discovered 4 years ago by her attorney, and that at the age of 89, following a stroke that has left her largely deaf and blind, Lee may or may not have been in a position to make a choice about the book one way or the other. But it was published, and I happened to be at a bookstore this summer, bought it and read it. Relative to the idea of time and location that we are looking at this month, I think it has something substantive to offer us, significantly by way of comparison with Lee's Pulitzer Prize-winning To Kill a Mockingbird. And I want to run something by you that I think helps explain some of the cultural predispositions in this country over the last 50 years or more since To Kill a Mockingbird was published and since it became iconic. Not just the book, but the movie version with the unparalleled image of actor Gregory Peck playing Atticus Finch, the role of the principled and understanding parent. Often, sermons are said to comfort the afflicted, and sometimes they are intended to afflict the comfortable. Though one hopes there is a restorative construct to walk away with at the end of the morning, the latter is both my intention and my hope this morning, just by way of getting you ready. To kill a mockingbird is to destroy something beautiful, something innocent, for no good reason. The mockingbird's purpose in being a bird that mocks the sounds of others is simply to provide beauty. The father in the story of that title, Atticus Finch, is the local attorney in a small southern town who represents a black man charged with rape. Atticus evolves in the novel as the paragon of virtue, strong, wise, humble, and, oh, by the way, in the movie, tall and handsome. He is a respected town leader. He is a widower raising his two children who adore him. He is a white man who does the right thing by a black man in the late 50s in Alabama. This book has been a requirement on high school reading lists for much of the last 60 years. By contrast, the Atticus Finch in Go Set a Watchman turns out to be flawed. He's the same attorney in the same small southern town, but he's old. He has severe arthritis and is exposed in the novel as a racist. That's his flaw, by the way. The other two are just descriptors. His daughter Jean Louise, called Scout, who is 26 in this book and home for a visit to Macon, Alabama from her professional life in New York City, discovers his shortcoming by overhearing him at a white supremacist meeting in town. She's stunned. She is profoundly hurt and confused, angry and disillusioned. How can this be? Her paragon, her idol, is a racist. The rug has been pulled out from under her feet, and she is lost. But a man who has lived by truth, she says, and you have believed in what he has lived, he doesn't leave you merely wary when he fails you. He leaves you with nothing. I think this is why I'm nearly out of my mind. What Jean Louise discovers in Ghosts at a Watchman is so very painful to her. I wonder if any of you may have experienced this kind of disillusion in your lives. When someone you may have loved so dearly, or perhaps an idea that you loved so dearly, something you had built your foundation on, is destroyed and lays shattered on the ground so much that you were nearly out of your mind. It rocks your world, it confuses everything. It makes mush out of solid, it turns sweet to bitter. It occurs to me that every one of us who made an icon of Atticus Finch, for many of us, the Gregory Peck version of Atticus Finch, has the potential to feel dismayed in this way. People said as much when Ghosts at a Watchman was published this past summer. For many of us, the original Atticus was the framework of a redeeming interaction between black and white. We identified with his magnanimity. We rationalized our own biases, perhaps by identifying with his virtue. We could claim our own non-racist identity by linking ourselves to this amazing character, a man of his times who nonetheless believes and does the right thing, and so wouldn't we as well? With the publication of Ghosts at a Watchman, an idol of our time has been destroyed. This late 50s and early 60s of racial virtue that all of us as white people could hang our hats on was in truth exposed as an illusion. The image of our God lay fallen on the ground so that every one of us who had identified our own sense of equanimity and righteousness with the character of Atticus Finch might have been struck in the face by our own capacity for wrong. Whether it was this experience or another disillusionment, it is a painful road. It is hard. The fact that we likely had not identified with the flawed side of this icon, this idol, for the last 60 years, but have offered To Kill a Mockingbird to every generation of high school students since it was published, has contributed, I think, to why we have been able to live in a sustained land of blind white privilege. We have named ourselves Atticus and adopted his virtues, measured as they were. Perhaps there are other blind lands you have lived in as well, other virtues you have imagined for yourselves. When Scout recognizes Atticus's flaws in Ghosts at a Watchman, she had to confront her own biases, or lack of them, for association with her father's. This afternoon, I tried to give you some help in a roundabout way to make it easier for you, to give you some insight, to soften it a little, her Uncle Jack says. To soften what? To soften your coming into this world. To soften your coming into this broken, flawed, racist, oppressive world that we live in this time and place in 2015. I think many of us who are white and privileged by that fact, among others, may never have grown up, have never been required to come into this world as it really exists for many people. It's a similar experience, even if for you the disillusionment is not about race. But with this example, it is. That's why a book like Waking Up White and Finding Myself in the Story of Race, which was our common read this summer, can make any kind of sensation as an awakening in 2015. May we not fool ourselves and imagine that people of color haven't woken up to the story of race since day one in their lives. I just finished reading The Fire Next Time by James Baldwin. It was published in 1962. It's angry and real and based on the lived story of race by a black man. He was awake a long time ago. He didn't have Atticus Finch to identify with. I think that's why a movement like Black Lives Matter can feel so confrontational to us as white people, because we've allowed ourselves to live into the humble and virtuous character of the unflawed Atticus, instead of acknowledging our contribution to a broken culture that privileges us because of our color, and always has. We never had to meet the Atticus Finch in Go Set a Watchman. As a culture, we have successfully protected ourselves from that. I wonder what else we protect ourselves from. I wonder who chose to shelve the ideas in Harper Lee's first novel, because Go Set a Watchman was written in 1953. Of confronting our idols and recognizing our need to determine our own conscience. In favor of the revised book's perspective, setting up three or four generations of a skewed version. From a New York Times book review by Michiku Kakutani this summer, how did a distressing narrative, and she's referencing Go Set a Watchman, filled with characters spouting hate speech, from the casually patronizing to the disgustingly grotesque, and presumably meant to capture the extreme prejudice that could exist in small towns in the Deep South in the 1950s. How did that mutate into a redemptive novel associated with the civil rights movement? Hailed, in the words of the former civil rights activist and Congressman Andrew Young, for giving us a sense of emerging humanism and decency. Who chose to do that, and why? Did they imagine white people were not strong enough to confront the myth of integration? Did they know they were setting us up for what, in Oprah Winfrey, Oprah Winfrey has called our national novel, decades of fictional virtue to claim as our own? Was whoever made that editorial decision saving us from ourselves? Protecting us from the pain of seeing flawed humanity? And at what cost? We have certainly shattered other contemporary idols in this time and space we live in, real life ones at least. We know, for example, that Mahatma Gandhi did not treat his wife well or his children. We know that Martin Luther King tended to plagiarize, had affairs, and by the way, was a big smoker. We know that JFK and RFK were rampant womanizers. Well, of course, it's fairly easy to bring humans, even elevated and important humans who have done good things for humanity, down to size. Contemporary media makes it fairly impossible to hide ugly truths. But a literary figure is harder to knock off his dais and is thus much easier to hide behind. Again, from Kakutani's book review from this summer, one of the emotional through lines in both Mockingbird and Watchmen is a plea for empathy. As Atticus puts it in Mockingbird to Scout, you never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view. The difference is, Kakutani continues, that Mockingbird suggested that we should have compassion for outsiders like Boo Radley and Tom Robinson, while Watchmen asks us to have understanding for a bigot named Atticus. Growing up is hard. We all watch our young people struggle with it. We were all young people once as well. And sometimes growing up happens at the ripest of old ages. Disillusion hurts, especially when it involves our own failures, because accepting unmeasured fictional truths as a part of our personal identities is its own kind of shortcoming, its own kind of failure. For all of us who have identified with Atticus the hero, or any other hero who represents unconflicted virtue, we have work to do. We have recognition, reconciliation, and then maybe down the road, forgiveness of ourselves, most of all. In whatever arena we have set up an idol that serves to protect us from truth in relationship to ourselves or to others, we must work to dismantle it, because it captures us in a cycle of narrow and constrained capacity. We can't be whole, we can't be reconciled emotionally, we can't be functional and mature if we're not willing to confront our false idols, even when it's hard, especially when it's hard. Harper Lee gave us the gift of honesty, of recognition, and of an ability to evolve, to mature, to integrate hard truth into broken truth. For us, what does that look like? I'm not entirely sure. It's likely different for each one of us. For Debbie Irving, who wrote the book Waking Up White, it meant waking up to systemic racism and the part that she plays in it. Recognition is at least that for many of us, severing the identification with the iconic Atticus and recognizing ourselves and our biased world in the flawed one. I wonder if we as a community might have the courage, and seriously, it takes a lot of courage, to put a Black Lives Matter sign in front of our church. It might be a symbol of our willingness to be vulnerable as a collective statement, but also as an individual one that recognizes our very intimate, human, and frightened frailness. Fallen, fallen is Babylon, and all the images of her gods lie shattered on the ground. It is hard to lose our icons, our idols. And I think ultimately, only love saves us. That ethereal and amazing emotion that says we can overcome our disappointments, our insecurities, our broken trusts. The kind of love that raises us up out of our struggling and holds us up to clearer truths. Let's put our books down and leave Atticus on the pages of fiction. Let's identify our own abilities to live right here, right now, in the messy and broken world that we inhabit, with the strength of our own conscience to guide us. Hopefully that means standing on the side of right, standing on the side that works to overcome the precedents of history that have not served all people well all the time. May we be fearless in that pursuit.